If you've ever thought about doing an interview or maybe making a quick video, you might think, how hard can it be? Turns out it's not as easy as you might think. Welcome to The Debrief Show. This is the show for leaders to bring out the best in themselves, their teams, and their communications. I'm your host, Dee Clayton. I'm a multi-award-winning executive coach and trainer. And being relatively new to podcasts and creating videos, it's a learning experience for me, as it will be for you. So I'm delighted to talk to our guest today, which is Alan Cook from Monogram Media. He's an entrepreneur, a podcaster, and an author. And he works with business leaders to help them experience some of the benefits that he's had from spending so many years behind the camera. We're going to learn why the boardroom is different and why some of the techniques we might use in a boardroom presentation may fall flat when you're on camera. We're going to learn about preparation and sound bites and why they may matter more than you think, and some of the most common mistakes that leaders make when they're using media, from videos to podcasts to interviews, and how to avoid those mistakes. I definitely am looking forward to this chat. Hi, Alan. Lovely to see you.
Good to see you, Dee.
So, Alan, you've worked with many business leaders, and you've also spent years behind the microphone. Tell us a little bit more about your story, please.
Well, I left school and started to work with the BBC, which was absolutely fantastic and a good grounding. And to be honest, I left after about 5 years because I wasn't going to be rich or famous. You go through this stage, you think, this is going to make me rich and famous. And bearing in mind that I'm quite old, and this was before the internet. So being rich or famous at that time was slightly more challenging. But it became obvious that while I really enjoyed working with the BBC and being on air and doing radio stuff mainly, it wasn't necessarily a career that I was personally suited to. So I left and got, as I say, a proper job, because my mum said, go and get a proper job. So I got a proper job, did all the university masters and all that sort of stuff, and worked in industry for a number of years. Then, like I think most people, we come across, we have a midlife crisis. And so my midlife crisis was to jack in a very good job working in industry and go and follow my passion, which was radio. So I started a radio station down in the Bournemouth, Poole and Christchurch area.
That's when we met, I think, then, Alan.
Yeah, you're from the neck of the woods, and that radio station is going quite well. It's called Hot Radio. I started it with a couple of other guys, and I was there slightly longer than they were, and we managed to get interest from a Premier League football club, and we sold our interest in it and a few other bits to a Premier League football club, who then subsequently lost interest in it, and then it's gone on to much greater success. Now a guy called Kevin who runs it over there. So I'm no longer involved in radio, but I was fortunate enough to leave at a time that gave me some opportunities. And I was sitting in, this sounds grand and it wasn't as grand as it sounds. I was sitting in the south of France thinking to myself, okay, well, we've done okay there. We've actually made a little bit of money. I've followed my passion. I've got over my midlife crisis. I can't quite afford to retire at this point. I've still got to go and find some work to do. So I decided to start as a media company, and I've been doing that for a number of years now. We've gone through various iterations. I'm fortunate enough to work with my son on there, who's much younger than me, of course, and he brings that youth and enthusiasm to the business as well. So that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Having worked in this communications world, what's the main difference for our listeners who are leaders in corporate and they're used to presenting in the boardroom? What's the main difference or differences, do you think, between that and working in broadcast? So whether they want to do a video, a podcast, be on radio, we'll go through each of those in a moment. But broadly, is there a difference between those two, presenting in a boardroom versus broadcasting?
Yeah, I think there is a big difference, actually. I mean, people come to it from different angles. Being media trained is very worthwhile doing, and that means that you're able to communicate across different medium. So be it radio, podcasting, video, YouTube, broadcast TV, it's really important. Everybody's an individual. I know that's a stupid sort of phrase, really, but people have different strengths. They reach the boardroom, that's absolutely fine. They're really good, obviously, at running their business, But that does not mean that they're very good at all at communicating by the camera or via the radio, podcasting or whatever. So it's a different skill set entirely. And the thing to remember is that if you're in the boardroom, you're probably there because of your skills, expertise, and you can assume some sort of authority. If you're appearing on a video, no one necessarily knows you from Adam. You might be there because you're a subject matter expert. You might be there because you've been told to by the PR department.
Yeah.
That happens a lot. So it's a different skill set. You have to be concise, accurate, and not go off tangent. So I'm sure we'll cover this later, and it's one of the key things, really, is that having a set of three key points that you want to make if you're being interviewed on whatever medium, that's a real approach to go into. And I think most PR people will know this. They'll give the MD a sheet of paper. So what are my three key points? And you try and stick to those regardless of what the question is, and you'll be okay. You'll get by. Yeah. But in terms of actually style, there's a big difference in style as well. We get a lot of people coming to us and saying, I've been on the theatre, I've done the stage, it's absolutely fantastic, I'm sure I can do this. And that's exactly what we don't want. We don't want people to, even though the medium might be called broadcasting, we don't want them to broadcast, we want them to be natural, we want them to be themselves. Mm. And that's a real difference as well.
So that's aligned with when I teach presentation skills, I'm always talking about the magic three things, but I also encourage people to do media training if that's what they're going to go into as a kind of specific area. Often presentation skills first, kind of get the basics in the belt, the good foundation of how to speak and how to communicate their message, and then media training on top of that. So that's absolutely a recommendation that I say to people, especially live interviews or news where you've really got to do it straight away, haven't you? Is there much difference between live and pre-recorded in your world? Like when you are training people, do you train them differently for live or pre-recorded videos or snippets, what are they called, not clips, whatever it's called?
Always assume, go into it and assume that it's live, right? And then work from there. If you're doing something for news, particularly, you are going to get clips and they're looking for the sound bite. And this is really, really useful because you know that the media organization, a broadcast media organization, is going to look for that sound bite. So a little bit of prep will probably get you some really good, tasty sound bites. And there are many examples on the internet, on YouTube, of politicians being briefed and then just giving the soundbite. And they're asked regardless of the, there are numerous, numerous questions in various different ways, and they always give the same answer. The reason they do that is that they can appear on the 10 o'clock news with the same answer and the same piece of information. They know full well that that's going to make it onto the news. Mm. There's a brilliant clip of Ed Miliband on YouTube, and I'll share the link with you and your audience, Dee. And people have really took the mickey out of him, but he was absolutely doing the right thing, bearing in mind that you're going to get clipped. But always approach to it that it's going to be live. If you're doing it for news or it's going to be news related, you are going to get clipped. You're looking for that soundbite. So play that game.
I think I was a bit disappointed. I got interviewed by ITV News once and the interview lasted an hour. She said how well I did. And I think I ended up on the actual news for like 2.5 seconds or something tiny. And I was like, oh, was that it? I've gone all the way into London to have it done. And yeah.
And that's another thing. Yeah, I mean, it's actually got less and less over the last years. And particularly since COVID, that the acceptance of people not having to travel to do an interview, not spending the whole day, which you undoubtedly did, having to go up to London and be interviewed. There's much more stuff that we call down the line. The broadcasters have different sets of software, and it's the same as that we're recording this. They'll send you a link and you're on air with your laptop or your camera or things like that. But quite often you will be asked to go to a location if they're interviewing a couple of people to get opposing views. Broadcast news needs to do this. They need to get consensus of views, one view and an opposite view. So it's handy to know who else is going to be there. But it also makes the interview congruent. So if you're the MD of a particular manufacturing business, invite the crew to come to your business and invite the crew and the producers to invite other people. And that means that you will be hosting them in your business, which is great. They'll thank you for it, no doubt. But, and that really helps. It just helps with you as a person getting your, you know, you feel more comfortable in your own environment. And it really helps the production company as well, the news organization, to actually, from the logistics point of view.
So that's a good way to get on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, some are very conscious about the branding that goes on, but you'll find more and more now that you've got the employees with their badge on in the background. Yeah, that's a definite way to help the media organization. This is a really important thing. If you're a journo, your job is to capture the information that you want for your editor and for the piece that you're doing. And any assistance that you can give the journo or the producer in that endeavor, just go ahead and offer it. Even if it costs you as a company or an individual a little bit more, making it easy for the journo and the producer will go a long, long way. And then you get in their black book. And if you're in their black book, they'll call you again and again and again.
Yes, yeah, that is true, because you see the same media experts each time. And not everybody's got a PR expert. So they don't know all of this stuff. They just know maybe that they want to get a bit more publicity. They want to be covered on their new launch or their new opening, whatever it is. So that's fantastic. Thank you. So before I go into each of the different mediums that I wanted to speak about, is there one skill that reaches across all mediums you think the leaders could do well to learn or practice or know about?
Practice. That's a really good thing. Practice does make perfect. The skill is to understand where your weaknesses are. And I know execs do this. They think, well, you know, I've got weaknesses, but I'll find someone else to fill in. When you're presented in your head of the organization, there is no one else necessarily to fill in. They'll want to speak to the MD, not necessarily the PR person. So know your limitations, get some training, get some practice. We've got a big orange button, by the way, which is on monogrammedia.co.uk. There's lots of little bits of help in there. Across all of the media, make sure that you practice. Make sure that you can talk coherently, usually for a minute at a time, maybe less. Remember that you're going to be judged on the minutes of airtime that you achieve. So sound bites are really important. And that goes across all media types. Mm-hmm. Have you got some catchphrases that you can use if the environment is right for that? Some little nuggets of information, some data that you can share. Mm-hmm. Be prepared.
Facts. They love facts, don't they? And
yeah, you'll be fact checked. So unless you're particularly if you're a politician, but it turns out if you're a very senior politician, you can be fact checked, and it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. So, but as a business owner, if you put something out that actually is not true, you will not only be fact checked, of course, but you'll never appear again.
He scribbled out that little black book you were talking about, yeah?
Yeah, the page will be ripped out. Yeah, we're not talking to him again.
So, Alan, let's talk about video. Then I want to talk about podcasts. And then I want to talk about radio or TV. Just split it down into three, surprisingly enough. Let's talk about video first. Many leaders are asked by their comms team to do a video, and I hear all the time that the MD or the directors that really don't want to do it, and that's because they're nervous often. What mistakes do you see when people are kind of forced into doing a video?
It comes down to the individual, and there are a few common things, but nearly all of it becomes that they weren't Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, and they weren't prepared. Basically, nearly all of it comes down to that. There's a certain arrogance that certain, and I'm not, this is very sweeping. I've been a managing director. There's a certain arrogance that goes along. Yeah, it's only video. I can actually really do this. There's no problem at all. Don't be the guy that, and I won't give his name out, but don't be this guy. Don't be the guy that says, oh yeah, we'll get the crew along. We'll do the filming, the corporate bit. Been persuaded to do the pieces by his PR. This is genuine, by the way. Mm-hmm. First thing in the morning, we were there at 9 o'clock in his location. Tick for that. Well done. Ready to record him. And he said, yeah, I've got three bits that we need to do. I'll probably get round to doing the first two, maybe three. We can get it done. And then we can go and do some filming, some other stuff. I said, oh, that's fantastic. We'll be done by 9:30, thinking this is going to be a very easy day. I kid you not, D. We were there at 5:10 going over the same pieces of information that he was unable to communicate via video. Now, these little things were very, very small pieces of information. What led him to fail, and he, the sweat started pouring off of his brow after about 15 minutes of realizing that he couldn't do it. We gave him a break of 5 minutes to go and get some water, cup of coffee. He has a briefing from his PR, and still at 5 to 10, he couldn't do it. And we never recorded those three bits because we then went off and do something else. And then we never had time at the end of the day. So we missed the opportunity. So don't be that guy. Don't be the guy that doesn't, that is so arrogant to think, I've made it. I've communicated with thousands of people before. I'm happier standing on the stage. I can do this. Don't be nervous about it on the same thing, but just don't be that guy. Be prepared.
Thank you. So preparation. I could hear you talking a little bit about the monkey mindset. People are nervous about it. But often also people don't like seeing themselves on camera. So even the other day I was interviewing another guest and they said they didn't like being on a podcast. In fact, several of my guests, that I'm their first podcast that they've done because they don't like doing podcasts. They don't like the sound of their own voice, or they don't like seeing themselves on video. Do you have any advice on that? Is that a common thing you come across as well?
Yeah, it could be harsh. Let me be harsh. Why not? Get over it, right? So the thing is that once you start looking at yourself and thinking, I've got a spot here, or or did I shave today? Or women going, can you film just this bit of me, or that bit of me, and not the rest, sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I recognize that. Yeah.
Thousands of people have seen us, right? You could walk down the street practically naked, and most people wouldn't give a damn. People do not hang up on as much as you think they do about your look or your appearance. Now, that's not to say that you couldn't help that. So be congruent with yourself as your personality. Be congruent with the subject matter that you're being interviewed over, whether that is radio or video. I think the key to that is play to your strengths. Okay. So if you genuinely don't like doing video, don't do video. Do audio. Or get someone to do it for you. If you genuinely think this is going to be bad for you. Quite often, though, with MDs these days, particularly, it is career limiting. I mean, and anyone in the sort of C-suits, it can be very career limiting.
Yeah. And that's where I come in, isn't it?
Absolutely.
In terms of, right, if you want to do it, then come and talk to me, talk to Will about taming your public speaking monkeys so that you don't have to have those worries and concerns. So you're right. If it's all about if it's important to you, if it's important to do it, put in the work to get over the fear, get over the nerves. If it's not important and there's just one video, then yeah, don't do it if it's going to cause that much pressure to you. Yeah, I like that. And how about other tips about sounding natural on video without seeming, I mean, people reading a script, and sometimes you have to have some notes because you have got some idea of what you want to say, you've done your preparation. So you might have notes that you look at, but how do you make sure people are not just reading from their notes because they want to say the right words, Alan?
Yeah, you've asked several questions there. I'm going to answer the one bit that's more common, and that's memory. So it's very difficult for us to memorize certain things, facts, figures, and so on and so forth. It's just naturally. If I have an ADHD brain, so it's some things are really easy, and other things I've got a very short-term memory, and stuff just disappears. And most neurotypicals have that as well. So everyone has this issue with memorizing things. So how do we solve the memory issue? So one of the ways I do this is by having virtual labels on different parts of what I see. So you don't see this at the moment, but right in front of me is a camera. Behind the camera is something else. It's a PC screen. And over here, there's another thing that's hanging off the wall. And what I could do is I could actually put virtually an object on each one of those things and go all the way around the clock circle so I can remember stuff. So I might start right at 12 o'clock and I attach, let's say I could attach something about our website on there. Okay, so then I'm going to mention the website. And then I'm going to mention a little bit, maybe 2 o'clock is the big orange button that I got mentioned. And then below, there might be an email address that I've got to mention and so on and so forth. So I can just attach these things. I just work around the clock. So the first thing I've got to remember is the fact that I've got to mention the website, monogrammedia.co.uk, number one, tick. And the big orange button that we've got on there is for podcasting and media training and things like that. So, and that's how, that's one way of doing it. So literally put virtual things on and around your environment and you'll remember. Mind maps are a beautiful thing. I love mind maps. I don't know about if you like these, Dee. To me, they're fantastic. Again, you can get so much information put on a very simple A4 sheet of paper that you could pin just behind the camera, and you can talk for ages about stuff on a mind map. And I personally find those really, really useful and interesting. If people are asking questions and they're skipping about, fine, you just go down another little branch of your mind map. They're beautiful tools.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm looking for my Simply Amazing structure that I teach people here, and they can have the visual, you know, right behind their camera so that they can have that. And that is literally a visual as well, so they can have that pinned up there as well. So we've got very similar techniques. I like that clock one, though. I hadn't heard of that. So thank you for that. And let's go on to podcasts then. So for podcasts, how do guests or hosts prepare for a podcast so that they can sound really confident and they can sound natural and energetic as well, so don't lose like their energy?
Well, there's two things, that if you're the host or if you're the interviewee or a guest on a podcast. So let's talk about just the host, because we can quickly cover that one. If you're the host, you're the conduit. You are there as the conduit for your guests. Your job is to extract information from them that is interesting to your viewers and listeners. You're not necessarily there as the subject matter expert. Why would you be? You've invited a subject matter expert to your podcast. You've got to be enthusiastic about what you're hearing. You've got to come across as a really genuine and interesting person, even if you're not. Most people who host, by the way, are. So hosting a podcast, I mean, it does take prep and da-da-da-da, all of that sort of stuff. But actually, the physical activity of hosting a podcast can be very, very enjoyable as well. And I know that you, on your podcast, and I've certainly done this on the numerous ones I've done, you get this opportunity to say, hey, I've got a podcast. Amazing people who you cannot get to any other way will come onto your podcast, and they may be the world authority in their subject. We had a podcast that ran for, I think, 20 weeks or something. So it was quite small, maybe 40 episodes. It was all about the behavioral science and behavioral marketing, which was a subject that we were particularly interested in as a company at the time. And we interviewed every single world expert on that particular subject.
Wow.
We have one of our fantastic hosts. She is an expert in cyber psychology. Now, if you don't know that, it's about how people mentally approach working with IT and now AI and things like that. She's going around her second loop of interviewing world experts on that niche, and she's going great guns with her podcast, Confessions of a Cyber Psychologist, by the way. To answer your second part
as well, yes, I've listened to those. Brilliant. Yeah,
I'm pleased you love it. They're very, very accessible as well, which is great from her. She asks the really good, pertinent questions. And even if you think, I have got no idea what a cyber psychology is, you listen to that podcast and she talks about gaming, she talks about AI, she talks about the use of email and computing and schools and work. And it's really, really interesting podcast. She's an academic herself, and sometimes they can be a little bit dry, but this particular one, really, really good. So as a host, as a guest, right? So how do you appear really great as a guest? You've got to be enthusiastic yourself. Don't assume that you know everything about the subject. You might be asked a question and you go, well, you know, that's not my area, but you know, here's my sixpenneth worth on this, right? So don't be fazed by stuff. Prep is always useful as well. Now, I know that you do a really good job with your guests, because I am a guest on your podcast. So I do a shoddy job with my guests on my podcast, in that I say, all we're going to do is we're going to talk about stuff that you already know. And that's the sum of it. Literally, that's all I'm going to do. And we'll probably start with the first question. And I'll throw the first question out and I'll know that I'm going to record for 20 minutes or an hour or whatever it is. And we just have a chinwag. We have a jolly good time. And then I get rid of all the, I edit out all this stuff that probably isn't so interesting and that keeps it on message and keeps it moving. And we end up with a 20-minute podcast or something like that. So that's the approach. Being a host, you're a conduit, and being a guest is you want a good day, and or both actually, who you're host or a guest, and you're not necessarily there as the subject matter expert, but have a great time.
Mm. Okay, bring up that energy and don't be nervous about what's going on. Just keep the conversation going as you would do in real life, really, I think, isn't it? But you've got to keep it short. I think one of the things that I've learned, I'm constantly learning because it's new to me, even though this is now series two, I still feel that it's new to me, this medium. But one of the things I've learned is to ask my guests to give shorter answers, and then I can ask for longer rather than having them talk for 10 minutes all in a row, because that's difficult if you do want to edit anything out. And it's also difficult to get them back on track if they've wandered off. Whereas if they keep it short, it's easier, isn't it? So easier said than done then. So finally, I want to cover radio and maybe TV and with that as well. So in a radio interview, is there a different approach than what we've talked about for podcast or video?
The great thing about radio at the moment, and people really maybe haven't counted and not aware, where we are at the moment with radio, there are hundreds, if not thousands, more radio stations than there ever have been. And these, I'm talking about specifically the UK. Mm-hmm. And these radio stations are crying out for interesting people to talk to. You could very well just phone up your local radio station and say, hey, can I come in and talk about X or Y with you? And if you talk to the right person, it might take a couple or three opportunities, but eventually that you will get there. You will definitely get there and you'll get on air, and then you'll get experience and so on and so forth. There isn't necessarily an approach that you need to do for radio that's different from, let's say, broadcast TV. With broadcast TV, it's best to make sure that you have a more structure to your approach. So are you trying to get on air with something that's topical? That's a really good way of getting on. Making sure that you understand from a broadcaster's point of view what their editorial policy is. It might be that they have an editorial policy that helps people who are, or they might have a theme, should I say, that may be to do with neurodiversity, which I do know happens, health issues, women's opportunities issues, sport, those sorts of things. So looking about how what you do, thinking, how can I be on message and how can I create something that the producers and journalists will be interested in that will help me get on air? There is another opportunity, Dee, which we have exploited for sure, and that is community TV. There aren't that many community TV stations in this country, but they really, really genuinely do need great content.
And what is community TV, Alan?
So community TV, you'll find on most EPGs, so the Electronic Programme Guide, on Channel 106. If you've not got something on Channel 106, you're out of luck. You've not got a local community TV station near you, but they're in the big conurbations around the UK. They are a great opportunity for people. If you can help those organisations get some great content, so be part of the production of that content, therefore saving them some costs and labor and so forth, this will really help you as well, and it'll help them. And that's the key. You're much more able to work with these smaller organizations than you are the bigger boys, the ITVs and Channel 4s and BBCs of this world.
Okay, some top tips there. Thank you. So do you have a golden rule for handling difficult questions? I know earlier you said about having your key phrase, for want of a better word. Any other tips about helping if they ask an awkward question and it's live? I think this might be what many people's fear is. What if I get asked that awkward question and it's live? Any top tips on that?
Well, yes. So there are only three types of questions. Open questions. So who, why, where, what, when, and how. Closed questions, which are yes, going to have the answer yes or no. Or the third type is in a rhetorical question. And it's those rhetorical questions you've got to watch out for. So the rhetorical question isn't really a question at all. You might have something as a politician, you might be going, the government, the government are spending X amount of money on this particular initiative. And as somebody, you know, you expect it, well, very good. Thank you very much for asking me that question. What am I supposed to do with that? Don't worry, I'll step in. And so that's a rhetorical question that you don't need to answer with necessarily an opinion. You can step in and give an opinion. So beware of those rhetorical questions, because they are deliberately put there by journalists to see what you say, right, to test the water, to see if they can get a little bit of juice. So you say, yes, the government are spending this amount of money. Yes, it's terrible that the government are spending this amount of money. Oh, I have an expressed opinion. Fantastic. The journalist goes, well, why shouldn't they? You know, are you against this? All of a sudden, oh, no, where have I gone with this? You know, and you're on camera, you're being recorded, and the journo's going, great, I can make the 10 o'clock with this one. This is my, this is my route to being the editor of this station. So just be aware of the rhetorical questions. And you can actually go, the government, you know, you're asked, for example, the government is spending X on it. You go, yeah, well, you know, shrug your shoulders. And? But then they ask, well, do you think this is right? Ah, I've got some thinking time now. I've got thinking time. Rhetorical question, beware of them, allows you thinking time. But as I mentioned earlier, Ed Miliband's example, which people have been up in arms about it many years ago, it's an opportunity. Back to your three key points. The government is spending X amount on this particular thing. Right, I'm going in with my three key points. It doesn't matter what the government spend, da 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 da. What we're interested in is this.
Yes.
Right? So you're then directing it into that. And then the journal goes, well, don't you think? Yes, but I've already mentioned that we think we're interested in X, Y, and Z, and so on and so forth. So you can direct the interview. So beware, you've got open questions, which is who, why, where, or when, and how. They're fine. You can have a ball with those. Closed questions, a little bit dangerous. Yes or no's, never answer a yes or no. It's a politician's thing, but sometimes it's good to answer yes or no. And rhetorical questions aren't questions at all. So step in and do your own thing. Have one of your three key points. Yeah.
That's just really useful. Yeah, thank you. And my final question is about tips for repeating ums and ers. I know we all do this naturally, and some ums and ers, I think, as a presenter are fine because it makes it natural, but not too many, like, so maybe what can be a bit annoying if you do too many and keep repeating yourself too many times, because how do you recommend people do something about that?
It's a natural thing that we put into our conversations, and it's done because our brain is trying to think of the next thing to say. And our brains run quite a lot faster than our mouths quite often, which is going to be a little bit of a problem. So the thing to do is to slow your thinking down and make it catch up with your mouth. And this is really good for intonation. So you can actually a little bit more slowly, if you talk a little bit more slowly, and you don't then need to put in those ums and ers. A lot of people do need practice with that. Again, it comes out of this practice. And so what we do as part of the training is get people to practice on a subject that they know. And it's usually in the form of a commentary. So the commentary might be, tell me about your journey here today without any ums and ers. Well, that should be easy. Well, I got up this morning at I got up this morning.
It's a game, isn't it? On the comedy shows, they have that game, don't they?
Yeah, without any ums and ers or repetition. Just a minute or something like that, I think it's called. It is practice. And you'll find that after not that much practice, that you'll learn to control your brain chasing away with what you might say, and you won't be putting in those filler words. And then once we've done that, we've exercised that, and people sort of get the hang of it, it still needs a bit more practice. So the best thing I can advise anyone to do, you don't need to go to media training school to do this thing. You can sit in your car as you're driving along and give yourself a running commentary. And this might sound mental, particularly do it when you've got nobody else in the car, by the way, because you'll look and sound stupid to them. You could say, I'm driving down this street. The speedometer says it's 30 miles an hour, which is just right because I can see there's a 30 mile an hour sign just 100 meters in front of me. Oh, I might now need to brake. I am braking the car so that I'd stop in time for the roundabout. And I can see that there's a red Mini coming to my right and there's a black vehicle to my left. I shall stop here. And you're giving yourself that running commentary. And just by doing that, you're tuning your brain to work at the same speed as your mouth.
Thank you. That's really helpful. I've worked with a client recently, just last month, actually, and he was a fantastic presenter. And the only thing that he needed to work on was the ums and ahs. And what we did a lot of those kind of techniques, but we also took long pauses, but also looked at how his problem was that he was commenting on what he was talking about all the time. So he had this monkey voice saying all what you're saying, and it's impossible for your brain to do two things. It's impossible for your brain to talk to itself whilst talking out loud. So that's why it didn't work, because there's only one channel for out. So if you can't do that, and that was slowing him down and making him do extra ums and ahs. So they can also be, yes, practice, but it might also be your strategy. If you're criticizing yourself as you're talking, that is definitely not going to work.
Yeah, absolutely right. You know, you've only got that one channel, and doing it out loud, I think, helps. So my final tip, Dee, is really to practice. There is no substitute for practice. Get your phone out, record yourself, get over the way that you look. It's not a problem at all. And then ask a trusted friend to look at your recordings. Are you being genuine enough? Are you coming across enthusiastically enough? Are there any twitches or little tells that are coming across again and again and again? Do that rather than with a trusted friend, rather than a family member, because a family member can usually be very unhonest and helpful when you want them to say, yes, you look lovely, you look brilliant, when in actual fact, you want somebody to tell you that, no, you were really terrible. But if you did X, Y, and Z, then you would be much, much better. And then do it again and again and again.
Yeah. So get out there and practice. Strongly agree with that. Thank you so much for all your top tips. I know there's more. We're going to visit your website, your lovely orange button. We will press that now. We're all intrigued. That was a very good sound by getting that in there. Well done for practicing what you preach. Thank you very much for joining us, and look forward to seeing you again soon, Alan.
Fantastic, Dee. Thanks for the opportunity, and keep going with that brilliant podcast that you're doing. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm enjoying every episode.
I hope you found that as interesting as I did. And you're going to have to watch some more debrief shows to see if I've included some of those techniques into the future shows. I'm learning too. So let's all practice these techniques and just continue to improve. Thank you, Alan. And if you want to know more about Alan or anything else that we're doing, please do look at the show notes, and you can sign up there to our latest newsletter as well. And if you want to watch back to other debrief shows, then we've got it on Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And we're on YouTube as well. Just look for Dee Clayton Channel and look for the debrief show playlist. We'd love to see you there. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do share it with somebody else who could benefit. Maybe a colleague or maybe a team member. Anyone you think could find this useful. And next time, we're going to talk to Justine Perry from Carryad Marketing. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to be talking about when the brand promise doesn't match up to the lived experience of your product or service. So tune in next time. See you soon.